on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Well, hi, Christy. Hi. We're here with Dee, so this is very exciting.
We're a little off kilter because Dee is here with us.
Yes.
Therapy legend here.
Play therapy legend. I am happy to be here.
So we have Dr. Dee Ray, you're officially retired from University of North Texas?
Yeah, December 31st was my last official day. I say that and people are like, oh, so you don't do anything with UNT. I'm still doing a lot, but not as a full-time employee at all. So.
And you started a new private practice, which is exciting. Yeah. A couple years ago.
It's 3.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It to me too, it feels like last year, because I feel like I'm still learning things daily. But yeah, it's been 3.5 years we've been in practice.
Well, that's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah, so Empathy Well, and I have to do a little plug, right? Like Empathy Well in Highland Village, Texas.
Yes,
and I have two partners. I want to. It's not just me. I have two partners, Dr. Angus and Dr. Yurkovich.
As Empathy Well does trainings and some other workshops for clinicians and some supervision groups and other stuff. So it's not purely clinical practice. It really is an integrative program.
Yeah, that's really important for us, is that we wanted to kind of bring it all together, because we also do assessments too. I mean, there were just different parts that all of us had an interest in, and because we believe in a way of doing therapy that, you know, is shown to be effective, and it has been nice to have some success in that area of private practice, that we like the idea of training others that, hey, yeah, you can do this, and then here's how it's done, and here's where we've struggled with it, and here's where it's been really great. So yeah.
When it seems like you're taking a lot of the work that you did at University of North Texas and now putting into the practical, how does this work outside of a university? Because I know a lot of times most critics that I've talked to about what we do about, you know, play therapy and child-centered play therapy are like, well, that's just in the university setting. So I think it's really nice that we're able, and I think you, Christy, and I have all done this in a private setting, and it's like, nope, it still works.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's on us, right? Because child-centered play therapy is so counterculture to how most people think you should work with children, and even among play therapy approaches is different. So I don't mind carrying that as far as, hey, you need to prove what you do works in various settings. Because I think if we're going to come in and say, hey, we do think things need to be done differently, we think this works better for children, then we got to come with the evidence that it does. And we got to come with, we think it works with children across multiple backgrounds, and children have diverse identities, and children coming from different presenting issues. That's on us to make that case that this really does work.
Yeah. Which brings up something I know I have faced. So it's, my journey has been interesting because I started my career in North Texas, which has a really thriving play therapy culture. I think having several universities that teach play therapy and other things makes the culture around the university accept play therapy at a different level. And then I moved to a city where, not that play therapy isn't known, but it is not as well known as it was in North Texas, that I get so much pushback about child-centered play therapy. So I'm just curious for you, Dee, how you manage pushback, if you find that you're experiencing that or not experiencing that, but kind of many of our listeners may be in areas where child-centered play therapy is more of the minority type of service that's being offered, or, you know, they get the statement, well, you need to be CBT because that's what insurance takes, or you know, there's lots of statements I've heard since practicing here in North Carolina that I'm kind of like, that's not true. That's not been my experience. And so I'm just curious how you kind of manage that now in practice, or how you and your partners have kind of pushed into that realm of being a clinician over a university faculty member.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, I have so many responses to that. I have a response that I could have given 20 years ago and a response I would give now. First of all, it's not new that people don't believe in CCPT. Like I said, I mean, most people, we come from, especially in the U.S. and I think in many other countries, come from a very puritanical view of children, of they're born for you to guide them and tell them what to do, and you cannot trust their inner instincts. So this idea that we believe that puts us almost immediately counter to what most people culturally are taught and learn and experience. And so, you know, how can you really believe in CCPT? You know, children need this kind of direction. That's been around, you know, like it's why we started the meta-analysis, what was that, 28 years ago? It was because we were here very ubiquitous in everywhere that, oh, play therapy is actually going to hurt the child. It's actually going to slow down. You know, you're going to put off really helping them. If you're not doing CBT with a five-year-old, then you're putting off getting them real help. So again, some of my response to that is, it's just been going on for so long, and certainly way before my time it was going on. And so it's just kind of common to hear it. And then I think what's changed for me over time is in the academic world, that's where I spent my career, is showing this does work. And it works in this way, and it works on these issues with these children. And I have a lot of details related to that of knowing what works and how it works. And so academically, there's been, I don't get pushed back on that very much, because people know I'm going to come back with, well, let me tell you about, and now you're going to have to listen to 30 minutes about the research on this. But what I find always interesting is parents don't care about research. I mean, we do need to talk with them about how we know it's effective and that kind of thing. But usually you got to keep that to two sentences, because they're not super interested in that. They want to know that it's going to work for their child, and their personal experiences are that's not how you help children. And certainly they're getting it from their pediatrician, the teacher, the school. They're getting from somewhere about, well, you got to go get your kid in social skills groups, or you got to go get your kid in, I've heard of this thing called this or that, and you should go get your kid in that. And so when parents show up at your door, parents and caregivers show up at your door, they really want to know about, like, how's this going to work for my child? And to me, that's where we really need to work in CCPT. And I talk about this quite a bit on articulation, is can we articulate what CCPT is? Because I know you have a broad audience on play therapy, but child-centered play therapy, what child-centered play therapy is, and what how it works, and how it will work for your child. That is where I think we need to have whole classes in that. Like, how do you talk about it? And how do you talk about it for individual children to individual family systems, school systems, because school systems are still very much rooted in behavioral ways of working. So how do we talk about it in a way that people can actually hear us? And so that's what I work on a lot. You know what I work on a lot is scripts. And I do talk about this in training. I work on scripts. I've just finished working with a supervisee. She's going to court. And absolutely, child-centered is going to be questioned. I won't go into details about the case, but it is, in this particular case, it's going to be questioned. So I worked on a script for court, which is going to be a different script than I give a parent, which is going to be a different script than I give a school administrator. It's all based in the same philosophy. I'm not changing the beliefs of the principals, but how I'm talking about it, I think we do need to talk with clarity about it. So that's really how I deal with it. I think, you know, when you talk about parents and caregivers, you know, they're just coming from a place they want their child to have help, and they're wary and they're unsure. And if you're saying, you know, hey, I'm going to bring your child in and we're going to play and they're going to get to express themselves and then they're going to feel all better, that isn't what is going to work for parents, because they don't see the connection. And so I think working on a lot of that. So again, I'm very, I can be esoteric about it and talk about it in this broad way, but I also am very concrete about, okay, well, let's write this out. And in my own head, like still 30 years later, I'm still like, this is how I need to say this to this person and work a lot on that. And to me too, y'all know me. If y'all ask me a question, I'm going to go like 10 different directions, but I'll shorten it. But just one more thing about that is really being, what is your belief system, right? If you're still, I'm not sure about this child-centered thing, it's going to be hard for you to sell it.
Yeah.
So I think for most people who are becoming play therapists, if they're new to play therapy and new to child-centered, and it seems like they're attracted to it, and it seems like it's a good thing, but yet they're not solidified in their belief system, they really need good supervisors who know what they're doing and how to talk about it, because they need the actual words of how do you do this. And of course, what I hope for them is that the experience will give them a stronger belief system and how it works.
Yeah, I really like that idea of scripts and really being able to speak to the audience in front of you, if that's court, if that's a parent, if that's teachers, right? What I heard you say is you're not giving a different message. You're just tailoring how you're talking about it to the audience that you're speaking to so that it's palpable and digestible by the audience that you're with.
Yeah.
But the like core of what you're sharing is identical to each of them. It's just worded slightly differently based on who you're speaking with.
Yeah. And if people want to wonder what's the core, I just want to throw this out there that, you know, we're talking about Rogers person-centered conditions and Axline's principles. If you put those together, that is what we do in child-centered play therapy. And so really knowing how each of what those mean and how they are played out in play therapy and in the process of play therapy, that core always stays there no matter how I'm talking about it. But yeah, not most people want to hear about unconditional positive regard and what that means and its connection with your unconditional positive self-regard and how that's going to impact your empathic understanding. Like, like that isn't, that's something we like to talk about and certainly something I love to talk about, but it's not something that communicates well to others many times.
No, I think it's important. You have to have your own understanding in your own experience. And that's one of the things. So Christy and I have heard you talk a lot, right? We've taken your classes. We've read your books. We talk
all like I said, we've heard of you a lot, Dee.
No, like in a good way, in a lovely way. We talk about you all the time on the podcast, right? And I think that something that we recognize is something that is a privilege of ours, that we've gotten to be supervised and educated and I think cared for, right? And really supported. And one of the things though that I haven't really heard you talk about that I'm really interested in, and you kind of expressed it, is that your own experience. And so I was just really curious, was there, as you were kind of engaging in play therapy or like starting to learn about this and a new play therapist, that really solidified, this is what I want to spend my life working on? Like, it was there something that really spoke to you in your early career that helped focus the direction of which you went?
Yeah, I mean, I have shared my origin story. So it's hard for me to answer that without talking a little bit about that, because I came in as such a cynic. And so I'll try and make that brief. But I got my master's really early, not because I was a genius, but because there was a program that was available at my undergraduate that you could just move right into getting your master's in counseling. Which is not something I would advise other people to do, because I was doing counseling at 21 and then had my degree at 22, which is, you know, not something I would advise for everybody. I think the wonderful thing about being a counselor is that you just get better and wiser as you get older. So we don't age out of what we do, which is a really nice career thing. But I'm not saying 21 and 22 year olds can't be counselors. I'm just saying it was rough. So I had it early on in that master's program that I was in. It was developmental master's. And so when they talked about children, they only talked about, well, you know, you do certain interventions based on the development of the client that you're with. And if you're with children, you would be behavioral, because that is what's most, you know, most effective with children. And so early on, I was like, oh, I love children. I'd always done the preschool thing and babysat. I love working with children. But once I heard that, I'm like, yeah, I was not drawn to behaviorism. It wasn't something I'm super interested in or believed in. and wasn't a big fan of Skinner, you know, those kind of things. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess professionally I won't work with children. So I went to the next level and said, okay, well, I'll work with adolescents. So that really was my focus as a early counselor. Had never even heard of play therapy, never heard of it. And I lived in North Texas, and my previous master's, about 5 years later, we were back in North Texas, and I was like, I think I want to get a doctoral degree and so that I can go into practice. Never thought I'd go into academia. And so I think I want to get a doctoral degree so I can go into practice and work with adolescents. And so when I talked to my former master's professor, he was like, oh, you need to go up to University of North Texas and do that, because it was a premier counseling program. He was not a play person. He was not a child person. So I came to UNT like with no interest in thinking I would ever work with children. Got there, and as you know, Christy was saying, UNT is kind of known for this play therapy world. I didn't know it, but had started to hear in my cohort, because of my cohort, there were, I think there were 7 of us and 5 were play therapists. 2 of us weren't. And so I wasn't. And started to hear things about this guy, Dr. Landreth, and started to be very wary about, man, this seems kind of cult-like, because they seem to like have this like belief system and they think everything he says is perfect. And this makes me nervous. And I did not know Gary at all at the time. I just would see him in hallways. And so I very early on, and we had to watch each other. Y'all know this because you came through the doctoral program. We had to watch each other in our clinical courses. And so I would watch my peers, and I very literally, because I don't have a great memory of experiences, but this one I very, very clearly remember coming home and ranting to my husband about, you would not believe what they're doing up there. These parents bring their children and they're so worried about their children. And then those therapists just take that child in a room and all they do is play, and they just watch them play. And then they tell the parents that things are getting better. And this is just the most unethical thing I've ever seen. I was just on a rant about it. I didn't understand it. I honestly, I've done a lot, you know, directly with children, but didn't really understand development as well as I should. All of those things, like, just didn't get it. And so I was, and I like to give credit, you know, because people who've changed my life, and one of those is Sue Bratton, she was my clinical supervisor at the time. And she's like, I think you should take play therapy. And I'm like, no way am I going to take this. I don't even know what they're doing. And she's like, I just think you should. And I'm like, okay, I'll take it on 2 conditions. I had 2 conditions. And one was that she would teach it, that I would not have to take it with Gary Landreth, which most people would hear this and go, oh my God, what is wrong with you? But I was like, I don't want to take it with him. Not that anything against him, is just, it was scary for me. And it seemed like people worshiped him. And I was like, I don't know about this. And Sue was somebody I very much trusted. And I'd take it in the summer when it's only 5 weeks, so it wouldn't take up much of my time. And so I took it in the first summer session after my first year as a doctoral student, and it just literally changed everything about my life. Because the other part of it was that I had just had my first child starting the doctoral program. So when I took play therapy, he was just turning 1. And I did not have what I would call a very nurturing childhood experience myself. So I did not have any clue how to be a parent. And so the play therapy, not only professionally, was how would I work with children, it was how could I be a mom? How could I be a better mom? And this whole different way of working, of looking at children and working with them. So I came in very cynical, and it was those 2, when you say what changed it for me, I'll say a few things. 1, without a doubt, it was the complete unconditional positive regard that Sue Bratton had for me. That's going to make me tear up.
I'm tearing up.
And the fact that when I would go home and start to look at my own child and look at how I was responding and reacting to him, it was working. And it was making a difference. And so between those things, that's really what solidified. And then I stayed, I'm going to say, because that's just my personality, I stayed fairly cynical about play therapy for a long time. Every time I got a client, I'd be like, well, this is the one it's not going to work with, or this is the one it's not going to be good for. This is the one that probably needs CBT and doesn't need CCPT. And that just didn't happen. Like every child that I would see, I'd see these major changes go on for them. And that, you know, over the years just solidified. Cause I really do think I approached play therapy like that for the first, I want to say probably 8 to 10 years that I did it, that I was like, okay, this is the one that it's not going to really work for. And then after that, I'm like, oh, it just keeps happening, that it's helping. And not only my work with children, but then thousands of supervision sessions. And so over time, I'm like, oh, then you get that more objective look at it's not tied to you. You're looking at what's happening in the process and seeing these amazing things that happen in the process. And so yeah, I don't know if this is one thing that solidified it to me, but those aspects of it were critical.
It was just so interesting, and thank you for sharing that. And I do think it's emotional. Like as you were talking about it, I got emotional, and I'm probably gonna get emotional right now. I am. We've already talked about how I'm always the one in my feelings, but
I like that. Christy has strong feelings too, though.
Yes. It's so interesting as you share that story, because it feels like it mimics mine. And I know I've shared this with you, or I think I've shared this with you. I know I've shared it in like the Play Therapy magazine, when that was your story. That's what you were to me, you know.
Now, like, Maggie, stop that.
No, but it is like Sue got me to UNT. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the interviews and I was like, why is everybody so nervous? Like, I don't get it. And it was because y'all were all there. Like, so D-Ray, Sue Bratton, Gary Landreth, and I didn't know who y'all were. And I had seen play therapy and I was like, no. And I was going to work with adolescents, and you sat me down my first summer in your office. I'll never forget. You had that little like love seat, and you're like, I really think you're a play therapist. And I was like, no. You're nice, but no, I don't know what you saw in me. I don't know what it was, but it changed my life, and I'm here because of it. And I took Dr. Lander's class. That's where I met Christy, right? Mm-hmm. Like so much of where we are today, I don't know would have happened without you and Sue. And we talk a lot too about how when we're at a conference, it's like we just had Ahu on, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like I didn't know her. You introduced me to her. And when you get around people from UNT, that feeling of unconditional positive regard that you have, and it's like you and Sue can look at us in an elevator or like kind of cock your head, and it makes you teary eyed because it's like, you see us, mm-hmm. you see all of us, like every part, and you love us anyways. And so anyways, that's really bad.
So we'll just sit here and cry.
I do think there's something about CCPT therapists that look beyond what's happening on the surface and really are attuning to like the deeper parts of the people you're with. If that's child clients, if that's adults, if that's our students, or if that's, you know, our mentors, mentees, there's something about it. So it brought a smile when Maggie said, you guys cock your head, because that is true. It's like, oh no, they're seeing what I'm working so hard to hide or to mask or like to protect myself scenarios. And so I do think there is something about a way of being in person-centered, child-centered, right? That does help us attune better to those deeper connections with the people by us and wanting honest, authentic relationships with those people. Or I know that has been what has been most influential to myself. And I also think I agree with Maggie that you and Sue, and I'm going to say Gary too,
Yeah.
A huge impact on accepting who I was as a human being for myself, because there were things from my childhood, from my upbringing, from the world that I was living in, that I was really working hard, you know, to project like people wanted me to, but not really knowing what I needed or what I wasn't nurturing in myself, that you guys helped us get to the point where we could acknowledge those parts and nurture and accept those parts of ourselves.
That's such a huge piece, right? Like this idea that if we're really going to accept the people around us, the clients that we serve, there has to be this ongoing awareness of the parts of ourselves that we are struggling with and how we accept those and how do we work with them in an authentic way. And that's really hard when you're like what you're saying, like when you're showing up at a doctoral program or you're showing up in a professional setting, and you're like, wait a minute, I don't know that I'm supposed to be this vulnerable in this setting. So it does require a safe setting. It really does to kind of allow people to unleash, well, their insecurities, but really their strengths ultimately. And so I the whole idea of how to become a CCPT therapist, that the having an environment of authenticity and safety is just a huge piece of that, which doesn't mean, because I know sometimes those things get confused. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm going to always tell you, I'm going to just praise you and tell you how great you are. That actually isn't authentic and doesn't lead to a safe relationship even. It leads to an easy one and one that I can easily hide in, but it doesn't lead to an authentic relationship. And so that is, yeah. So again, when you're journeying as a play therapist, having people around you that you can always be authentic with and struggle, like show them your struggles because they already see all your strengths. So it's not this huge risk to show them that. It is part of our growth because our continual ability to accept ourselves is completely translates to our ability to accept the children and then their parents and caregivers. I did want to say too, because you said about Gary. Yeah, I went on to, yes, be supervised, taught by Gary, very close to Gary. Very, yeah, obviously I love Gary. I've learned so much from him, but I just like people to know I was, because I think this is a similar experience. People are just quite scared of him at the beginning because you're like, it's Gary Landry. So I had to get over my own insecurities to engage in an authentic way with Gary, because Gary engages very authentically and you just don't hide with him.
Yeah. It's a scary place to be, especially when you start.
Yeah.
Is that, you really can't hide somewhere that they can see through that. Sometimes they do it well, and sometimes they do it in ways that makes you revisit or re-question some things, both in many different ways, but yeah.
Yeah.
But I also thought it was interesting when you were sharing your origin story, mm-hmm. and I heard it from Maggie too, kind of the cynical part of trusting the process and like buying in to, or I don't even want to call it buying in. I think it's seeing the value of child-centered play therapy. But it makes me think about your career, Dee, and how that really is where you have dedicated your life, is really helping people to see and really uncovering and unmasking what it is about child-centered play therapy, right? And it made me think about, gosh, I wonder if this is where it started for you to really believe in it for yourself, was you kind of had to understand the process of what is happening in child-centered and help other people see that process too.
Yeah, I mean, definitely being able to see it, and obviously the experience of it, of being in a room with the child and seeing how me not telling them what to do, how they're growing from that, right? Mm-hmm. Like how me really understanding them and believing in them and me and presenting myself hopefully in an authentic way, that how that breaks through for them and they can, make contact with their ability to, how do I navigate these things that are happening for me? And yeah, just seeing that over and over and over solidifies that. And I do think sometimes people give up on CCPT before they allow themselves to see it happen, and out of our own anxieties, external pressures, whatever it is. And it's just, once it happens and you see it, and then you see it many times, it did become important to me to, I will say it's probably the experience, obviously, and then seeing my own child respond to it, right? Then it became important to me about, okay, well, we got to break this down and see, let's see that the evidence about, is it working and how it works? Because who's going to sit and believe me as I just talk about like this happening? Let's break it down and figure out what mechanisms are occurring and what changes do occur in it. And again, what changes we might not see in it. Yeah.
There's so much of it. I don't know how to explain it sometimes when I'm talking to people, where it just feels like this, like, and I'm not a very religious person, but sometimes it feels super spiritual. It's like you're seeing this child and who they are and the light in their eyes and their just inherent value and worth and capacity. It's such an honor, and it's so hard to explain what that, when it happens, it's like, oh, like it just rocks your body. Like, I don't know.
It's that connection of human spirits, right?
Yeah.
Like that is there, however you conceptualize that for yourself in spiritual religious terms, it's there, right? Like it is how we connect with one another and what we give to one another with just our being. And when we're in an open place with the people that we're around, whether they be 5 years old or 40 years old, we have these amazing gifts that we can give to each other that heal us.
Thank you so much, Dee, for coming. This really was awesome. And we will continue the conversation next week. Yeah.
Yes, I feel honored to have been invited.
We appreciate you being here.